My name is Jesse Lewers. I go by Doi online. Is this not a microphone?
No microphone.
Okay, so this talk is about dependency injection using the breadboard framework. To get started, I kind of want to start with a motivating example. Oh, there we go. To kind of explain the kinds of problems that breadboard is intended to solve. So you start with, you have your web application here. I don't know if you can read that very well, but it basically just connects to a database, pulls out some information, and then renders it into some kind of template file with some logging thrown in there and everything. And so this works fine. But if you want to start doing things like testing it, you probably want to be able to maybe switch out the model for a test database or something like that, so it's not always connecting to the same database. So you might want to pull some of your objects out into attributes using like a Moose kind of design. This way you can swap out the model. You can it's more easily extensible. Move the logger into the places where it's actually used in the model and the view. but having the logger not available, having to initialize the logger multiple times can be a problem sometimes. You want to initialize it with a certain amount of configuration maybe, and you want to do that in one place. So you pull the logger out into its own attribute and then pass it into the model and the view. And this makes it more flexible, so you can just configure the logger in one place and then use it globally, even though it's not actually a global, because globals have their own kind of issues. The application still stays basically the same. And as your application grows, you start to want to add more configuration options to it. You can swap out just the DSN to initialize the model more conveniently, so you don't have to create a new one all on your own if there's more things that it requires, the template route, things like that. But as this kind of grows, the amount of kind of manual passing things around that you have to do gets more and more and more complicated. And this starts to kind of overwhelm the benefits that you get by having a good structure for your application, just by having to deal with all the little fiddly details that this kind of brings along. And so the solution here, that the dependency injection is basically what solves this problem. It provides a solution for handling all of the passing around of all of this data. So dependency injection is a form of inversion of control. It basically takes control of your application, and you provide information to tell it how to configure things. It's referred to as the inverse of garbage collection sometimes. Basically, garbage collection handles how your objects are destroyed. You don't have to think about that at all. Dependency injection lets you tell the dependency injection system how your objects should be created, and then you can just go and ask it for an object, and it'll just give it to you. It'll figure out all the details. You don't have to do any of the manual passing around or anything like that. It's all consistently done. It manages the construction of your objects for you. Some of the benefits you get here, when you have multiple places that need to have access to the same object, so you have your web application maybe, but you might also have things like database reporting scripts or things you might want to send email to people to get, you need to get access to different parts of your application. Making sure that all of your objects are initialized in the same way every time is very useful. And dependency injection provides this by providing a consistent interface to make sure no matter what part of your application you're accessing, it's always initialized in the same way. It does this in a way that doesn't need globals. You don't have to deal with all of the issues that globals can cause, the wide scope of places that might go wrong during debugging and that sort of thing. And also just makes testing and reuse a lot easier, because you can swap out different parts of the structure without affecting how everything is passed around. If you have, for instance, your logger being initialized in a hard-coded thing in your application, you can't necessarily swap out for a test logger, which just stores the log information instead of printing it. You'd have to go into your application and all the places where you use the logger, change the class name and things like that, or have each part of your application be configurable separately, which is a lot of duplicated effort. So one example that you might be familiar with for dependency injection, Catalyst includes a kind of a simple dependency injection system. So you have, for instance, you call the model method, and it figures out how to create a model object for you based on your configuration. It's not very, it's pretty limited, because the only thing it can really do is create objects of those specific types. You have hard-coded types in the object. And I mean, it's extensible, but it's still a fixed set of things that it can create. And it can only create things from the configuration. You can't have, it's more difficult to do things that depend on each other and that sort of thing. And so Breadboard is kind of a more flexible way to wire your objects together. This is a breadboard. This is kind of what a typical breadboard setup looks like. It consists of a bunch of different parts. You have containers and services, and I'm going to go over what all this stuff means. But this is just kind of an overview of what it's going to look like. So the basic component for a breadboard setup is the service. The service is actually what represents each individual piece of data that you're storing, typically like an object or something like that. There's a method on the service that'll give you a new copy of that object, typically by just creating it from the constructor. And there are three different ways to create objects from services. So you have constructor injection, which is the simplest form. You just give it a class name, and it knows to just call new on that class and return whatever the object was that was returned. You can use a block injection, where you just have it run some kind of subroutine and just return whatever that subroutine returns. And there's also a literal service, where you can just give it some fixed data, and it'll just return that data every time. The next component that Breadboard has is called a container. Container holds all the services and other subcontainers to provide sort of the overall structure for the Breadboard system. You can access the contents of a container, either another container or a service, via a method call. And there's a shortcut, so you can just say, I want to get the service out of this container and then get the data out of the service. And this is typically how you interact with it. because containers can have subcontainers, you can there's a way to specify which service, where you want to look for your services. You do this by specifying something that's basically like Unix paths. The relative paths are relative to the current container. Absolute paths go up to the parent. It's all pretty straightforward. And so the key piece of functionality that Breadboard adds to do what it does basically is through dependencies. Dependencies tells Breadboard how your classes are related. Which parts of your application depend on which other parts. You specify this as just mapping a dependency name to some other service that you've already defined. Relative paths are relative to the container that contains the service. So here we have a service defined with dependencies. Here the view depends on the logger. What this means is that when you ask for the view service, it will go and create a view object by calling new on the view class, but it'll also pass the logger as a parameter. So it'll say logger goes to the, it'll resolve the logger service to find out what to pass. You can do more complicated things. Here's how you would do it with a block injection. You specify the DSN as a dependency, and you can pass in the block receives the service object with all of the dependencies already resolved, and you can just access them directly to pass them however you need to. Like here, if there's a custom constructor that you need to work with, you can just do it this way. And this can get as complicated as you need to. This abstracts the model data into its own separate subcontainer, and then you just access it. You can just access whatever parts you need without having to pollute the namespace of the top level container. Parameters are basically the next kind of thing that Breadboard has, and they're basically the same kind of concept as dependencies. They're how you specify different parts of the application that need to be specified. Instead of having them already encoded in the Breadboard structure, they're supplied by you when you try and resolve the service. So here, instead of depending on a name dependency, or having a dependency on a name service, you have a name parameter, which you then pass into the call to resolve. You can depend on services with parameters by just passing the parameters into the dependency specification, just like here. And you can depend on the service directly and then pass in the dependency inside the block itself by using the inflate call there. If you depend on a service which has unfulfilled parameters, it'll return like a kind of special object that you have to then inflate with the parameters to get the actual object that you need. But there's a lot of different ways that these kind of things can interact in whatever way you need to. You can have optional parameters. Parameters can have type constraints. Parameters can have defaults. So you can get different kinds of ways to access different pieces of information. And parameters interact with dependencies in the same kind of way. You can specify, if you have an optional parameter that also has a dependency, you can have the default instead be resolved through a dependency rather than a hard-coded default. And so that's basically how you manage. Those are the kind of ways to manage your data. Life cycles are one more component that basically tell you how you resolve services. So by default, each time you call get on a service, you create a new object each time. If you instead specify a singleton life cycle, every time you call get on the service, you will get the same object back. This is kind of an alternative. Instead of using singleton classes, which you run into problems when you might actually need more than one of them in your application, if you instead specify them as singleton services, the class doesn't have to know anything about how it's going to be used or anything like that. You can just have it as a singleton service, and it'll act like a singleton if you access it through Breadboard. But if you do happen to actually need more than one of them for some specific part of your application, or if you need to be running more than one thing at once, you can add non-singleton services for the same class, and that provides a lot more flexibility in that way. So here's the original example that I showed earlier. You can kind of see how this all fits together now. You have the application, which depends on the model and the view. the model, which is a block injection, which depends on the logger and the DSN. The DSN is a literal service, and the logger is a class is a singleton class service, and then the view is just a regular class service, which also depends on the logger. And so here you can just when you resolve the app, it goes through and it fulfills all the dependencies recursively and provides all of the passes around all of the data that's necessary for each individual component of your application. One of the more interesting features that Breadboard has that's kind of built on top of the system is it's called type maps. It basically, once you have a service, you can define a mapping from a class type type constraint to that service. And then instead of requesting a particular service when you are resolving something, you can instead request an object of a particular type. This is kind of useful on its own, but the more interesting part is that if you are using types, if you have a type map for all of the components of your application, a lot of times you can just infer what the dependencies actually should be for each service. And this will simplify a lot of the configuration that you'd otherwise need to do. Here we have a container which has two services here. The infer, it basically automatically creates a service and automatically figures out the dependencies. So, and it does this by looking through your Moose class, introspecting the attributes, and looking at the type constraints to see if there's any types in that class that match up with types that you've defined in your type map. So here the logger doesn't have any attributes, so it just turns into a regular constructor injection service. But the model has a logger attribute, which is a logger. So it has a logger type constraint. It looks in the type map, sees that we have a logger already in the type map, and it just automatically knows that you want to have that be a dependency. So the way this kind of works is that any attribute that is required in your classes, when you go and use the type inference, it automatically, or dependency inference, it automatically becomes a dependency or a parameter if it's not in the type map. This way you can specify it later. For non-required attributes, you can either specify it as a parameter, it's available to be specified as a parameter, and you can also manually add it to the dependency list if you want it to actually be a dependency. And so if you want to rewrite that original example using type maps instead, this is a lot simpler of a structure. You don't have the application object is just automatically figured out. It has attributes for the model and the view, and so you don't have to actually specify that. The model has a dependency on the DSN, which isn't a class. So you have to actually specify these manually and specify the block so that it knows how to deal with a custom constructor. But once you have that service, you can just add the model to the type map and have it be used as a type later on. If you need to depend explicitly on a typed service instead of a named service, you use the type colon prefix there instead. You can pass any kind of service constructor parameters, like for the logger, we pass lifecycle singleton to make sure it's a singleton service that's created. But it basically removes a lot of the repetitive specifications of things that you'd otherwise have to use. So going back to what I was talking about with Catalyst earlier, Catalyst is actually trying to move towards using Breadboard instead of their own kind of homegrown solution. Right now, they just have a plugin that you can use, which will allow you to specify your Catalyst configuration as a Breadboard container instead, which would, if you have that written as an external container, you can then use that in other external scripts to initialize your objects using the same data that Catalyst will use in its internals. But there's work being done to actually move Breadboard into the Catalyst core to be used as its actual dependency injection kind of system. But that's I think Florian is the one working on that. So now that we've kind of got an idea of how Breadboard works, I kind of want to go into some sort of best practices for how you use it. One of the most important things, and one of the things that people get confused about a lot, is that the Breadboard containers, the dependency injection in general, it's an application initialization. That's what it's for. A lot of people, a lot of people will see that they're creating a lot of other kinds of objects at runtime. But if they might want to try and use Breadboard to create those kind of objects too. The trouble you run into here is that if you're using your Breadboard container at runtime in your application, you basically eliminate all of the benefits that you've just gotten from using dependency injection in the first place, because now your Breadboard container is just another kind of God object. And that's not that kind of defeats the purpose. What you want to really do is use Breadboard to create the general structure of your application, all the pieces that are tied together at the start. If you need to create things at runtime and you want this to be more pluggable and stuff like that, the container can create factory classes, factory objects for you. They don't even have to be factory objects. I mean, closures work just fine as factories if you need something simple. But this will allow you to keep the parts of your application separate, which is kind of a lot of the point of Breadboard. It lets you keep your application separated enough that in a way that's not really tedious. The subtitle here is wrong. But another really good kind of best practice for using Breadboard is instead of writing the containers just directly as an object with the creating as a variable, you can create container classes where you subclass Breadboard container. One of the main design points for Breadboard is that every part of it is very extensible. You can subclass containers, you can create new kinds of services, you can create new kinds of life cycles. Creating new kinds of containers is one of the most common ways to do this. You create a new container that will initialize initialize itself directly through a build method. If you pass an already existing Breadboard container as the first parameter to the container sugar, it will append to that container instead of creating a new one. So here you can just put all of your configuration inside the build method, and then you just have to call new on your container. Like here, it just creates a new subcontainer directly instead of having to specify the whole configuration. This is very useful, especially if you want to be sharing containers between projects or between different parts of your project. It's still kind of ugly to do this all in build and that sort of thing. So one of the projects that kind of makes this simpler is called Breadboard Declare. What this does is it kind of maps services to Moose attributes. So instead of defining services, the problem with just defining services is that they're still kind of hard to swap out. You have to actually edit the Breadboard configuration if you want to swap out different parts of it, which makes it easier to not have to edit a lot of different parts of your application, but there's still some place that's not as configurable. And so you could either manually create have the service be defined by some method calls on your custom container class, or you can just do this basically. This allows you to specify all of the breadboard service configuration as attribute parameters, and then just use your class as a container directly. So services are declared just by defining attributes. Attribute accessors resolve the service if there's no value. So if you don't pass a value into the constructor, it just resolves the service as normal. But if the attribute does have a value and you're in the middle of resolving a service and it wants to resolve a service that maps to an attribute, it will take the value that you provided for that attribute instead. So this will allow you to swap out different parts really easily by just passing them into the constructor, and then they'll just be used in your whole dependency resolution process. So for instance, in the example that I just showed you, you can just pass in the DSN as a constructor parameter, and then when the model is resolved by just calling the model accessor method, it will just be using the new DSN automatically. Breadboard Declare also makes type maps a lot simpler. It automatically just infers how the type map should be set up by the type constraints on your attributes. So if you declare an attribute that is a view, it will figure out that you want to be adding that service to the type map with the class of view. And then if you specify infer, it will automatically do all the type inference for that service. So if you this way you can where was I? This way you can have services that have both a type and a name, so you don't have to use the weird kind of type colon type name syntax for depending on other services. And you can also just specify both infer and dependencies to specify dependencies that you might otherwise need to specify manually. So one of the projects that I've been working on that uses Breadboard Declare is Ox. Ox is a web framework that I've been working on for a while, which basically uses Breadboard Declare as its sugar and configuration layer, basically, with a few extra pieces added on. So here, all the stuff at the top is just a normal Breadboard Declare class. It specifies all the pieces of your application that are necessary. And then you can specify a router to specify how the incoming requests are routed. And so in this case, what this router syntax means basically is that it looks for the controller service and then calls the index method on it, passing it only the request object for that request. Anything else that you need to handle the request is already resolved for you by dependency injection. This way there doesn't need to be like Catalyst's context object that's passed around everywhere. There doesn't need to be the controllers and all the different parts of your application don't need to have access to the entire application, which simplifies the scope of what you're doing a lot. All of these classes are just normal Moose classes. The only thing special about controllers is that they have methods which expect to receive a request object. Everything else is just normal Moose class. All of the different components, these components aren't even, there's no necessity to use MVC kind of structure. These names are just conventions. You can use whatever you want here. The only kind of requirement for Ox is that it has an app service which can be resolved to get a PSGI application out of it. And it runs entirely on PSGI. And so this simplifies things a lot just because there doesn't need to be an explicit kind of plugin system for it. You can just write your Moose classes the way you normally would. You can have dependencies that are just a template object, for instance, instead of having to use something that wraps it like Catalyst View TT, that sort of thing, you don't have, you can use like Kyoku X model or DBS class schema, like those sort of things just directly. There doesn't need to be as much boilerplate just to try and get all the different CPAN things that you already use all the time, just to get them to work with the application framework. And so once you have your application described here, all you really have to do is you can call two app on it. This will resolve the app service and give you a PSGI application. But you can also just access individual pieces of the application directly. And this is where it comes in really useful for if you have, say, database like scripts that need to access the database. You can have those scripts just use your model directly by instantiating the application object and then only resolving the model portion. This ensures that it's always accessing the exact same model that you would get when you run your application as a whole. But you don't have to have the whole application running in order to have access to it. This is one of the big things that is really annoying to do in Catalyst, because there's not really a way to get at, for instance, a Catalyst model without initializing the entire application. And so here's kind of a little more of a in-depth example. It has a logger, and all these things are inferred. And yeah. So, does anyone have any questions about any of this? Yeah.
I'm just discovering this Java world and QuestGI. How does it relate to QuestGI? Is it
to what?
Kind of port of QuestGI, or is it the same?
I'm not sure. What are you asking?
OSGI.
OSGI. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not sure. I mean, it's based on not necessarily based on, but it's been inspired by other dependency injection systems in other languages. I'm not sure. I don't know. Anyone else? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So the question was just why should I be using dependency injection instead of just doing it by hand, basically? Because that's a lot of effort. I mean, it just saves me a lot of time if I can just start with this and know that no matter how big my application grows, it's not going to get out of hand kind of having to deal with making sure everything is in place. I mean, basically the same sort of reasoning behind why am I using Moose instead of just writing the objects by hand. I mean, it's what... Oh, and I guess why you use garbage collection instead of manually handling objects. Like it's just another level of abstraction. It's not the benefits aren't usually apparent for smaller projects. It's really for a smaller project, it doesn't really matter how. Like I was showing in the beginning example, you can have simple applications that don't need any of this, but having the ability there to expand more easily without having to kind of re-architecture a lot of different things is very useful. Yeah?
I have a rather complicated application,
uh-huh,
which is global code base for 40 countries.
Which is, I can't hear you, sorry.
I have a global code base, uh-huh, for 40 different countries.
Uh-huh.
Each country has a different configuration.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have to instantiate all the objects, uh-huh, or modules with a different configuration.
Uh-huh.
So fast and easy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say about
So the question is just that if you have a lot of different configurations that you need for, like you have for different countries need different configurations for things, basically. And instead of instantiating things from the configuration each time, is there a way to use dependency injection to handle that? Is that basically what you're asking?
At the moment, I don't have any dependency injection, but
right.
I'm building a new. It would be
yeah. So one of the nice things about breadboard declare in particular is that it still does work just like a Moose class. You can have subclasses. You can have roles that handle specific configuration needs for specific things. So you can have different breadboard containers for each of your different, for each of the different countries, I guess, in your case, that do things slightly differently, but they're all inheriting from the same base container. And that works really well.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yeah. Right.
And we try to make them as thin as possible in the catalyst.
Right.
Adapt as much as possible in the
Right.
Models. And that causes like quite a wide spread of packages that support your application.
Mm-hmm.
When you said about how this would allow you to reach into catalyst and use models that are in there without using the entire catalyst application,
mm-hmm.
it kind of implies that it would kind of regroup together. My question is, could you envision a way that have your application where it's not really a catalyst application, but breadboard has made catalyst the dependency for the context within which you're using your application, so that catalyst becomes like the dependency rather than the same word.
Where are you using the word?
No, when you're using it anyway.
That's not an explicit goal, but I think the question is...
Yeah, there's the catalyst maintainer, so he can answer that. Yeah. 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 That's. I imagine that once Catalyst starts using breadboard, those kind of things will be a lot more straightforward. Anything else? All right. Thanks.